Good morning.
How's it going? Good. Well, welcome. So, how we doing, Steve? Are we good, like, recording-wise? Okay, awesome. We're going to get started. And so the last couple weeks, we've been talking a lot about just the importance of stories and telling our stories and even thinking about our stories. Like, a lot of times we don't even, at least for me, I'll go a few weeks and I'll think to myself, like, oh, I haven't really thought about, like, what I'm doing. Like Becky mentioned in the first service, it's easy to coast when everything's in place. And so this summer has really been about pressing the pause button, maybe, like she mentioned, and thinking intentionally about our stories and what happens when we have overlapping stories or sometimes seemingly conflicting stories within a community, and how do we do that, and how do we be together in a community? And so we've talked about how each person has value and worth, and that means their story has value and worth. And then we've talked about the importance of language and how language can affirm a person's story or destroy, and just the immense power of that. And then shame and the role that shame can play when we are spoken to a certain way or when language is used destructively. Often that's a place where shame can enter our stories. And then we've talked about a single story. We watched the TED Talk, The Danger of a Single Story. And so we've set a lot of the context for this discussion. We've talked about a lot of like abstract concepts, and now we want to start to like put some flesh on this idea, I guess. So that's why these two are up here with me. So we just want to welcome Sam and Eli. And when I was thinking about this idea of single story, one of the things I was thinking about is in our area, you know, sometimes it may not look super diverse. We're in central Pennsylvania, but there is a lot of diversity here. And so as I was thinking, I thought, like, what is a people group maybe that might be seen as other, as those people in our area? And one of the populations that came to mind was just our plain neighbors that surround us in this valley. And sometimes I think we have single stories about them. And so I thought it would be neat to sit and just chat for a couple minutes with Sam and Eli, who have some specific experiences with this group. But I also think it's important to say that Sam and Eli don't speak for all Plain communities. This isn't they're not token representatives of Plain communities either. They have very specific stories. And I think you would probably have more wisdom about this than I do. There are many different Plain populations. You know, we think of Amish and Mennonites, but then there are also, even the Brethren would fall under that, Bruderhof, I believe, Hutterites, and there are others. So there's just a wide variety of diversity, even under the umbrella of Plain communities. So I think that's important to say before we even get started, and also important to say that Sam and Eli don't speak for everyone that might fall under that umbrella. So that being said, Steve, do we all have to use this mic? Okay, just making sure. I'm not tech savvy with that back there. So I thought let's begin by just even discussing the words Plain community, because I think you both maybe have more wisdom about that than I do, for sure. So when we say Plain communities, what do we mean by that?
Well, I don't think we generally use the term Plain community. There's a generic term that I so often hear, and it's Amish. And it's really not accurate for the people in our community. They're actually Winger Mennonites, Old Order Mennonites, if you will. And there are Amish over in Dry Valley that you'll see with the white top buggies. So really we need to try to define who are the people. And I think one of my pet peeves is when they'll talk about the Winger Mennonites in our valley and call them Amish. And this is many years ago, a discussion with a dear brother about this, and he was talking about the Amish here in the valley. And I said, well, they're not Amish, they're Mennonites. And he wanted to argue with me about it. And I said, believe me, I know what Amish are. I was one. So we really need to try to define people as to who they actually are and not just go into that generic term that they're Amish.
Generally, I think what sets apart the people that we reference as being plain communities is their interpretation of the scripture, and a heavy interpretation on not being like the world, as Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 6, wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate. That is a very important part of, quote, plain life, separation from the world. And that's interpreted in various ways. The other is non-resistance. I mean, the two tenets of plain faith are non-conformity and non-resistance, where Jesus teaches in the Sermon on the Mount to love your neighbor. And, of course, we don't believe, even as brethren, that it's proper that we're loving our neighbor by going to war. So those are really the two tenets of plain life, if you will. But those are interpreted so differently. And somehow, I've been looking at this whole thing about how all of us as people of faith balance culture and tradition with Scripture. And we all have our little niche where we don't take this literally, but we take this literally. And so that's where a lot of our differences come from. You know, in the plain community, you won't find women in leadership, as because the scripture, Paul's writings, clearly say for a woman not to speak. That's pretty tough stuff. So there are many, many places where interpretation is what causes us to look different, be different, and we have to be really careful that we respect other people's interpretations. Sometimes that's pretty hard. You know, it's not that we don't have a handle on the scripture. Let's face it, and much as we like to think we do. For example, we don't do well with the whole speaking in tongues thing. We like to explain that away. Others, that's a very basic tenet of their faith. So let's just respect that among each other. None of us have it all together.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot. I think sometimes we struggle with... like, what do we say then if we identify somebody who maybe by their dress or their mode of transportation, perhaps, we identify them as a member of a plain community? Is that what we say? If, you know, instead of, like you said, Eli, the generic term kind of is Amish, but that's not accurate, as you pointed out. So is using the term plain community appropriate, I guess, is what I'm asking? I'll preface this by saying I'm such a language person. Language is very important to me, and that's my field of study. So I always want to make sure that I'm using the term that would be respectful to that person. So that's why I'm kind of digging a little bit more there. I want to make sure that if I'm addressing someone, I'm using the language that's respectful to them.
I think the most respectful thing we can do is look past their garb or their dress or whatever, or they're driving their buggy, and see them as individuals, learn to know their name, look at them as individuals that have faith and worth and people to get to know, and don't get hung up in the fact just because they may look and act different. So I know I'm being sort of idealistic here, but that's where you should really be trying to head. I don't think we're picking, that person is a Methodist and that's a Lutheran and that's a Brethren. We don't spend so much time doing that, but I think we get hung up on the fact that they might be driving a buggy or riding their bike, and try to look back past that and get to know them. And I think one thing that we did when we had an anniversary celebration is we had Eli Reif and some of his family come, and they sang for us in German. And so they stayed and ate with us at our potluck, and we interacted with them. And other people with ideas and hopes and faith and the commitment to Christ that we want to have. So try to not think so much about who they are, but do get it right. learn who they are. I mean, make the distinction. If they're Amish, the guy's going to have a beard. And if they're Wenger Mennonites, he's not going to. If they're Mennonites, they're not going to have a beard. That's pretty simple that you can figure out. I don't expect you to learn what every buggy looks like Sam and I'd know. But simple things. Just call them who they are, but most of all, get to learn to know them. You have anything to add to that, Sam?
The question had to do, I guess just for discussion purposes, when we identify someone in a community and maybe how do we accurately speak to them or identify them, or is that even important?
I don't know that identity is important. I think it's fine to ask, what group are you part of? Because there are a lot. There are many, many versions of Plain People here in the Valley. And I've always said, if you want to know what a community is like, go to the local auction. You don't have to go that far anymore. You can just go to Wenger's. And with all due respect, Dottie, she can't tell, those apart. I mean, they're all Amish or some derivative to her. But to me, I can pretty well tell where they go to church. But there are probably 6 or 7 different churches represented there. And I can tell pretty much by the kind of, quote, covering they wear. That's another very important part of how they interpret the scripture. It's 1 Corinthians 11 with a woman being covered. And so, by the way, it's not a bonnet, it's not a cap, it's a covering. So if you call it a covering, you'll be showing that you understand something about that. Where was I going?
I think you're done.
Thank you. So many of you know, many of you here know, but many of you maybe don't, that Sam and Eli both have just personal experience in spending some time in different Plain communities. So I thought I would love to just have you share just briefly. I know we've emailed a lot this week about briefly and had some chuckles about that. Because really, whose story can be summarized briefly? I mean, I think that's kind of what we're getting at this summer, is that none of us can summarize our stories briefly. But that's what I'm asking you to do. but hopefully this will be an invitation as well, that maybe some of you might feel like reaching out and hearing more than the brief story. So just briefly, what is your experience in Plain communities, and how do you see your experiences connecting with some of the ideas we've chatted about this summer? So value, language, shame, and single story. Where do you see some intersections maybe between those ideas and your own personal experiences?
She asked good questions. Well, my experience, unlike Sam's, it has a lot more pain and separation in it. Growing up in probably the most, almost the most conservative Amish group. My dad had this bad habit of reading the Bible a lot and just couldn't fit how we were living and asked to live into what the scripture said. And we had this journey from one community to the next until the point when I was 15 and the church was really in a turmoil. And as, you know, the sort of the bratty kid that I sometimes was, I said, if that's church, I'm not going. So at 15, I just stayed at home. But then at age 17, we moved on to leaving the Amish. And the painful part that I'm talking about is there was rejection from the family. I mean, you probably heard about shunning and excommunication, and that's where the real pain of that was and is. And I guess where I end up here, Sarah, is with that experience. We have no right to reject other people because of who they are. I really have come to strongly believe and endorse that because of the pain that I have felt, and then more importantly, my mom and dad have felt. Most specifically, my dad. It ended up making him a rather bitter person, and there may be time to talk to people and to try to help them come around when they're going the wrong way, but never rejecting, never.
Well, I grew up in Lancaster County. I was 32 years old when we left our Amish community. We had three children, moved to a wonderful little community in Snyder County. I still consider Snyder County my home. But I love my people. So don't bring me your Amish jokes, okay? I don't want to hear them. And again, we were excommunicated, shunned. But, you know, again, it's a matter of interpretation. Paul talks in 1 Corinthians 5 about what to do with an unrepentant sinner. And that's the whole deal is, even though you are not leaving the, quote, faith, it is interpreted as you're leaving the faith, and so you're treated as an unrepentant sinner. That's where we differ on interpretation again. Timothy, in 1 Timothy, I think it's 1:20, he talks about these two guys that he handed over to Satan. I don't have that verse handy, but he says he delivered them over to Satan. And those are the words that are spoken over you when you're excommunicated from this community. I don't cling to that. You know, I have met people who enjoyed shunning me, and if that's their joy, it makes no difference to me. My own family technically needed to shun me because it's part of the rules. And it bothered me not in the least because I knew that I was not shunned in their hearts. And I'll never forget that, you know, when we were excommunicated, our leaders came to our house and they spoke those awful words over us, you know, that's rather frightening. But, you know, a week later, our bishop and his wife came just on a social visit, and they just came to show us they loved us. So there's that, you know, kind of, again, in the issue often is the unfortunately, and it happens here too, sometimes culture and tradition trump scripture. And I don't think any of us are free of that. Sorry if you thought we were doing pretty well, but in our case, we lean more toward the culture of the world where we fit in, and it's noticeable. But you know, we, yeah, sometimes our the culture we choose to live in trumps Scripture. And we find a sadness in this when we see in the playing community where, again, culture and tradition overrides Scripture. And then, of course, there are the differences about interpretation again. There are always two sides to this story. Not two sides to the story, but you always have people in a church, in a community, who are, well, let me be careful here, okay? What happens in the playing community is if you live in a quote legalistic way, is that the tendency is for the Scripture to have less meaning and tradition to have more. But I know many, many people who are born again and live in the playing communities and have chosen to live in that culture and in that tradition. And my sister and her family are an example of that. We didn't have a lot of differences in belief. We had a lot of differences in practice.
Thank you. One more question I have. Did you want to add something? You both mentioned and again, my language brain picked up on this, but the language that went along with the rejection, that language was the vehicle for the rejection. And I think my own experiences would say that often then that's where shame enters the story as well. And I'm asking, I guess, if that was true for you. Do you look back and think of that and identify that as a point where you experienced shame? And then how did you and how do you continue to wrestle with that?
30 years ago, I would have never dreamed of sitting here and talking about my people. That's the term I learned from Sam I just totally love. But if somebody would ask about my past, I was trying to figure out how I would fabricate so I wouldn't have to admit that I grew up Amish. So there was a lot of shame that was attached to that. And part of it came just from a personal experience, but also from the things that people are inclined to say. And there is this attitude that maybe they're not quite as smart or quite as, intelligent and with it as we are. They just sort of live back somewhere in their old-fashioned ways. But I'm not quite sure how I came to the point where I says I'm not having any shame about this. I had nothing to do with where I was born. I made choices as the time went by, and that was not something a way that I could live, and really overcame that shame. And I think it's just that somewhere along the line I learned that I have an identity, and who I am is somewhat formed by where I came from, but perhaps more by following Jesus. But one thing I wanted to add, according to what Sam was saying, my brother at some point learned to know a cousin of ours that is no longer Amish. And in talking to that cousin, he remembers growing up and knowing that there was his mother had another brother. But just knowing that, not even knowing who his name was, and that was my dad. He had become a non-person. I said that sort of loud, non-person, didn't I? But that's because I feel so strong about it. They had let him become a non-person because of what he believed. So that's where the pain comes from. And that's still real. And I'm believing and hoping it'll never go away, because that kind of thing, making people into non-persons, is not something acceptable.
You know, when the movie Fiddler on the Roof came out, it was interesting that Mennonites flocked to it, and we're going, we get it. You know, this whole thing about tradition. And it's funny if you've been there. Have I felt shame? I can't recall that I have. I think I'm not a psychologist, but I think there's such a thing as letting shame enter your life. I don't think I've done that. Can I address one of your other questions? Some of the false, I think one of Sarah's questions was, what are some of the false stories? No, I'm fine. And I always say to people, you know, if people want to ask me about my Amish life, and they'll say things like, oh, that was must have been hard, and you know, I always, it's like, stop it, you know, stop reading Beverly Lewis, stop watching reality TV, read Don Craybill if you really want to know about these people, read Don Craybill's writings, you know, otherwise it is very untrue, and the whole, you know, the term Rumspringer has now become a national pastime, whatever. And I just want to tell you that there's an element of that that's true, but it's very, very minimal. It's not a standard practice, okay? It's in isolated pockets of Amish life, you'll have that kind of go on. But it's untrue in most cases. It makes good reality TV. But, what was the question again?
I've been watching the clock.
I know.
I think that was my job.
It was your job.
Clock, so.
Yeah. But that's okay.
Turn the mic off, Steve.
So I think a final thought that I just have that's kind of percolating as you're both sharing and speaking is I'm thinking back to the TED Talk that we watched about the danger of a single story and this idea that the remedy to a single story is lots and lots of stories. And I think, like, one of the gifts we have in this valley in particular is we're surrounded by lots and lots of stories because we're surrounded by lots and lots of people. And, you know, I'm just wondering, like, how can we creatively and intentionally cross paths? And, I mean, you mentioned, like, going to Wanger's is a great place to cross paths. But do you have any final suggestions, I guess, of how to... just creatively get out there and rub up against other stories and interact. I think sometimes we don't really know.
Well, I think I started with that. Just learn to know our plane, our Mennonite as people. And one thing that we have done, I have done, is one of the dear Mennonite ladies comes and cleans our house, and. You know, we just talk to her as another person. I mean, of course, we go pick her up and take her back, but just completely think of her as another person that we're interacting with. And I think that's the key. Person. There are people.
In case you didn't know, this may be a bombshell, but they're just like us, you know. So forget about the... You know, the hats and the buggies, they're just like us. Among them are those who deeply love the Lord and those who deeply love their tradition or deeply love, you know. So try to think of it that way. I have the advantage of speaking Dutch to them, and I love to talk Dutch, so... You know, when I meet them, I talk Dutch, and right away the curtain falls, and we have a friendship. And I especially like to talk Dutch to the kids, you know. And, stop at their farm stands and tell them their blueberries cost too much, and you know, get a. I just love to talk Dutch to them, but anyway, they're like us. So get that through your head. We're really not different.
Thank you so much, both of you. So I'm going to release you to head to your groups, and your discussion leaders have a few questions to kind of continue on a discussion for the next little bit. Thank you. Thank you. You survived.